The following readings are excerpts from teachings of Tanajananan Akinjano, a senior disciple of Ajahn Chah. Currently, Ajahnanan lives in a monastery called Wat Map Jan in Rayong Province, southeast Thailand. The first reading comes from a teaching titled Recollection of Death. It can be found in a collection of teachings, Simple Teachings on Higher Truths. Ajahn Chah frequently recommended the contemplation of death, particularly at times when the mind is agitated and restless, thinking uncontrollably, because it's such a powerful recollection. When we are overwhelmed by some aspect of greed or anger, or just deluded by confusion and doubting, it can cut through all this, bringing a sense of finality into the mind. Wait, I'm going to die soon. It will cut through all those other less important, secondary thoughts that are bothering the mind at that time. This is a very useful meditation technique. We can practice the recollection of death by contemplating the uncertainty of our lives and the certainty of death. We continuously reflect that having been born, we must also die. Hearing news of death and loss, we can likewise reflect upon our own mortality. Suppose that the global human population amounted to 6 billion people, of whom 60 million died every year, 600 million every decade. If there were no new supplementary births, then within a century, the entire population of the world would have passed away, all 6 billion people. However, because there are additional births replacing those who have died, we fail to see the presence of death. Except for those terrible events that stem from natural disasters, when great numbers of human beings die through events such as these, we can reflect that we too must also die, that we cannot escape from death. When we contemplate the Dhamma, however, we have to do it the correct way. Reflecting on impermanence and the uncertainty of life, we might get to the point where we see that all of us must come to the same end. There is no way around this, for ultimately, we all have to die, but it's important that we contemplate in a skillful way, arousing urgency and energy in the practice. The contemplation should be developing mindfulness and wisdom, bringing the mind to greater peace. If it is done unskillfully, it can bring depression, seeing life as meaningless. And if we have that kind of negative reaction, then we have to stop and realize that it isn't going in the right direction, that it isn't bringing the correct results. So as we contemplate and practice the Dhamma, we have to always look at the results of what we are doing to gauge whether we are practicing in the correct way. If there is more energy, more effort, more peace, then that's the sign that it's going in the right direction. The second reading is from a teaching titled Our Body Will Return to Elements. It can be found in a collection of teachings, Sotapattimagga, The Path of the Sotapanna. When we put forth effort in bhavana, mental cultivation, the mind will gather into quietness. This is samadhi. We use it to investigate into this pile of sankhara, karma formations, this pile of rupa, form, and this pile of namma, mind. At the beginning, we look directly at the rupa, from the head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, and into this whole mass we call a body. Now where does its real essence come from? The real essence of the body comes from elements. The food that supports us initially starts out as the earth element. We can see this with trees. The tree absorbs the minerals and moisture from the earth. The sun supports the process of photosynthesis in the green leaves of the tree, and through this, the tree grows. Eventually, it produces flowers and fruits. In the beginning, the tree grows and flourishes, And finally, it produces flowers and fruits. This can provide food and a home to different kinds of animals. It becomes a part of the food cycle, supporting life. Humans rely on animals, plants, and fruits to keep their life force going. It's a cycle that revolves around. It is all reliant on the elements, earth, air, water, and fire, providing this body with earth, air, water, and fire, thereby facilitating its further growth. However, when we misunderstand this simple, natural process and latch onto it, taking this heap of elements to be me or mine, we fail to acknowledge that in the end, it will all just pass away. In the end, it will start to degenerate and change its form. When the breath comes to its end, this body will start to decompose. The different kinds of bacterias will begin to eat away at it, and the body will change color until the various elements decompose back to their respective elements, all following their natural course. Earth goes back to earth, water back to water, fire to fire, and air to air. All the conditioning factors that have made up this form come to their end. So when we see that the body comes to its end like this, where is this me? In the past, we took this body to be ourselves. But now, where is this being? Where are all my things? Our parents, who we call mother and father, when their breath has come to its end, where have they gone? The heap of elements that have broken apart and scattered, where have they gone? The heap of elements have broken apart and scattered, earth back to earth, water to water, fire to fire, and air to air. The truth is just like this. But if we follow after all the worldly conventions, there is still a me, a him, a them. There are still relations, brothers, sisters, husbands, wives, mothers and fathers, sons and daughters. In truth, these things do exist, but they are just conventions. And if the heart can't see the truth, then it will take on all these conventions as reality, that they are actual and self-existent. The final reading is from a detailed lengthy teaching titled Maranānusati, and it can be found in the collection of teachings called Seeking Buddho. The Buddha taught us that our lives are uncertain. Death is for sure. It is certain we must die. Our lives will end in death. When we foresee the danger in life's uncertainty, we become one who is heedful. The Buddha stated that the one who is heedful never dies. Appamādo amata padang, pamādo macchuno padang. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The one who is heedless is dead already. Such people, although still alive and sitting, standing or walking, are said to have already died because they are dead to virtue and to goodness, to merit and to that which is wholesome. However, all of us sitting here can be described as heedful, trying to be interested and attentive in the practice of Dhamma that will brighten, cleanse, and purify our hearts in accordance with our efforts. Death, therefore, can become a wellspring of Dhamma. The Buddha informed us that the mind of one who frequently contemplates death will become heedful of the truth, recollecting the impermanence, suffering, and selflessness of this body. Just this subject of death, then, can become a basis for our meditation, a foundation for our practice that we cannot overlook. If we frequently practice Maranānusati, contemplating death as a meditation theme, our minds will become heedful of life's uncertainty and the certainty of death. We have to die for sure. This life will end in death. Some people, after conception, die in the womb. Others pass away after a couple of months or a couple of years, or after reaching the age of 10 or 20. This we can observe for ourselves. Our human lifespan, therefore, is uncertain. Some die young, and others die old. If we contemplate death in this way, then whatever power and prestige one may possess, whatever riches, rank and renown, whether a prince or a pauper, a beggar or a billionaire, even great and mighty kings, we can see that death grants no exemptions. Even our supremely enlightened Lord Buddha, the Mahapurusa, the champion of the world, the refuge of all beings, fully endowed with the virtues of wisdom, great compassion, moral discipline, and absolute purity. Even the life of that sublime one's body was crushed by death. Will we then, as ordinary people, not yet possessing the wisdom, purity, power, and might of a Buddha, escape death and the danger inherent in death? Will we not have to be parted from all that we love and delight in? I myself will not escape death. It is beyond the ability of anyone. I consider my life to be uncertain, whereas death is a certainty. Consequently, everyone in this world is in the same predicament. Nobody can escape from death. Death will envelop us all, ending in separation from everything we love and cherish. All our wealth and possessions are gained with great difficulty. Some people amass a great stash, but are afraid to put it to use, whereas others are thrifty misers and hoard their wealth away. When they pass on, these goods and riches are unable to bring them any benefits. Why do we act like this? Because, like children playing in a garden, as a blazing fire approaches, we do not yet see the danger closing in. Most of us are like these children, having fun and frolics. We are unaware of the threat, unaware of the danger closing in, creeping slowly, relentlessly, upon us second by second, minute by minute. That is, old age, sickness, and death. In the end, death comes to separate us from our bodies. However, it does not just part us from our own bodies. It also parts us from our children and spouses, our parents and relatives. Death separates and takes away that which we most love. How is it possible that death can take these things away from us? For the reason that these things are not within our power to control. Separation through death is a natural law. The law of death is a force of nature. After hearing the teaching of the Buddha, Venerable Anyakondanya saw the truth because he understood how all things naturally arise and pass away. The meaning of all things here is everything that exists, everything that is subject to the conditions of impermanence, suffering, and not self. Where no self or soul or person or being or me or you can be found. Venerable Anyakondanya saw his body as impermanent, suffering, and not self, as arising and ceasing, as being without a being. When one understands these natural conditions, as did Anyakondanya, it is called attaining the vision of Dhamma. That is, he saw the physical body according to reality. When the world is seen according to reality, the vision of Dhamma arises. This is a profound transformation. The heart is transformed from that of an ordinary person. It changes from a Kalyana jhana to an Arya jhana, from just simply a good person to a noble one. When the Dhamma is seen, it is just this Dhamma which makes the heart noble. How is it that the heart becomes noble by seeing the Dhamma? It is because of being heedful, like Venerable Anyakondanya. Before the Buddha's enlightenment, Venerable Kondanya was diligent in serving and ministering to the Bodhisattva for 6 years. However, after he saw the Buddha to be partake of nourishing food, Venerable Kondanya shunned him and ran away, believing it unlikely that the Buddha would attain to any lofty spiritual realization. Although Venerable Kondanya renounced the Bodhisattva, he did not abandon his own practice. He was possessed of faith, and having already put forth effort to build and perfect spiritual qualities, He realized that by continuing to cultivate Dhamma in this way, his heart would likely gain a firm spiritual foundation, a natural source of confidence and purity. Therefore, I would like to encourage you all to thoroughly investigate this subject of death. The contemplation of death, skillfully cultivated as a basic meditation practice, naturally brings many benefits. All anxiety, worry, and worldly concerns will inevitably be eliminated from our hearts as a matter of course. For this reason, then, we should all put forth effort in our meditation and try to make the investigation and contemplation of death firm in our minds. Try to develop this meditation as much as possible, investigating with determination and resolution for the sake of good results. Sometimes during our investigation of death, the heart experiences sudden flashes of samvega, a profound sadness with the sobering insight that life is uncertain, and that if we are destined to die, then nothing is worth clinging to. With the arising of samvega in the heart like this, it can be said that our contemplation of the meditation theme is correct and proper. If our mind experiences sudden moments of calm, which then turns into wayward thinking, this shows that the mind is concentrated to the level of Kanika Samadhi. If the calm in the mind goes deeper than this, which, when applied to the contemplation of the meditation theme, arouses feelings of samvega and spiritual rapture, the samvega arising only momentarily, leaving behind an experience of deep bliss, peace, and serenity, then this indicates that the mind is entering Upajara Samadhi. This is a samadhi which is almost solid, sustained for long periods of time, and where body and mind are light and tranquil. If we use our minds to frequently contemplate in this way, then solid concentration will arise as a matter of course. This can be called cultivating wisdom to develop samadhi. That is to say, we contemplate using the mind to see impermanence, suffering, and not self, to see that this body will have to die. To arouse the theme of death in the mind, we must use our memory of those things we have heard and remembered to guide our contemplation. As the mind converges, it gradually calms down, advancing in stages from Kanika Samadhi to Upajara Samadhi. As proficiency in samadhi increases, the contemplation of death becomes more skillful and effortless accordingly. In my own practice, I used Maranānusati, the contemplation of death, as my first basic theme of meditation. I made an effort to recollect death all the time. For example, sometimes I would watch children playing football, observing their delight in the world and their experience of pleasant, desirable moods, I would reflect, "These, our bodies, cannot be taken for granted. Do those people who come looking for entertainment and distraction realize that death is creeping in on them? I, too, am no exception. If I could die right now, or at any moment, then why do I allow myself to seek only delight and distraction in the world?" When I opened a newspaper and saw the daily announcements that this or that person had died and that the funeral chanting would be conducted in such a monastery at such and such a time, then I would reflect that these people, although all of rank, fame and fortune, they still had to meet with death and disaster. Previously, they were alive, just as I am now, and in the end, like them, I naturally will have to die. Contemplating in this way, the mind became calm and some vaga arose. This is called making an effort to develop the recollection of death as a basic meditation practice. The remainder of this talk, Maranānusati, can be found in the collection of teachings, Seeking Buddho.